EHAS Club presents Stories to Create Podcast, where the tale of our guest takes you back, way back to where the story first got created. Now, to help create this new story, here is your host, Cornell Bunting.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Stories to Create Podcast right here at EHAS Club. I'm excited because today, you know, of course, we are hanging out with a technical writer at Sony Electronics. He's actually a STEM coordinator or former administrator at Quality Life Center. And he's also a former training manager. He's also a former educator at the school district here in Lee County. And I got to tell you, man, my guy went to the Boys H. Henderson High School. Did I say that right?
Boy H. Anderson. Cobras.
Yeah, Cobras. A man from Chi-Town. Everyone help me welcome Mr. Todd Thomas.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. Listen, man. It's amazing to have you on the show today. This is beautiful. We going to go into some stuff.
Hey, I'm going to let you guide me, and I'm always right up front.
This is good. So, you know, before we start the show today, guys, I just want you guys to know, for all you guys that have been sending message about when can I do a call-in show, or when you guys can call in, we're getting there. Be patient with me a little bit. You know, we're this is a new season, and so we're getting all that sorted out. So once that is structured and ready, you guys will know. Okay, I really appreciate you guys supporting and listening to the show every week. This really helps in a big way. So continue to share with your friends. So that's that. Now we're gonna dive into Mr. Thomas World. We're gonna go back. Take us back, man. Take us back, the young boy.
Ooh. So to do that, we have to step back a few years.
Yeah.
So I was born in Chicago.
Okay.
And I don't care about my age because people don't know that I'm 60. So
no.
So you didn't know that.
Wow.
So. But I was born in Chicago,
yeah,
and moved to Detroit. And back then, life was really good. I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, gravitated from the projects in Chicago, and the projects
right.
are all gone now.
Yeah.
So I had that project life, but it was different back then.
Uh-huh.
Back then, the projects had complete families, and kids wow. came out and played in the projects.
Wow.
You know, there's a different perspective to the projects in
right.
today's world.
Right.
So I grew up in Chicago and Detroit for my early years. I lived like three blocks from the Motown house.
Wow.
So my brother and I would skip church and we'd go sit on the ledge and watch the stars come in and out. And
yeah.
we only knew Stevie Wonder.
Really?
We knew who Stevie Wonder was because
yeah.
you could tell.
Right, right.
The rest of the guys, I'm pretty sure we saw all the stars go in there, but the Jacksons were gone by then.
Yeah.
They had moved to California.
Oh, okay.
70. So it was great times in Detroit, but most of my life was centered on the East Coast of Florida.
Wow.
Moved to Fort Lauderdale. That's where I went to middle school, high school. Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
So before we come to Florida, though,
mm-hmm.
because I know there was a fire that happened after. Well, they did a lot of burning of buildings and stuff up there. What that was after MLK was shot.
I think it was before that. I believe that was 1967. We moved over there right after the riots. But I do remember the stories from my uncles and things like that. And basically the policing in Detroit
yeah.
was definitely weighed against the African American neighborhoods. That's just the way it is.
Right, that's just the way it was. Yeah.
So they went in heavy handed on at a bar on Euclid Avenue. I remember this vividly from my storytelling uncles.
Yeah.
And they busted up a bar. Mm-hmm. You know how people party and things like that. So they busted up the bar, and it became violent. And I believe, if I remember correctly, somebody got hurt or somebody died, and then just the violence broke out, and it just spread all through a certain area of that black neighborhood. And that was literally about, that's about a half mile from where I grew up.
Right.
But we moved in after that.
Right.
And at the time we were there, about 6 years, it was awesome.
Everything calmed down.
Went to inner city elementary school. And when I tell you, when we look at what we have today with critical race theory and people that are not educationally trained telling educators what to do.
Right, right.
We learned from a diverse set of teachers at an inner city school. We did black history all through the year. We did all history. We did everything. And we had a nice diversified set of teachers. So don't let anybody tell you that you can't get a great education from an inner city school.
Right, right.
So that was a beautiful part. But yes, we moved in right after the riots.
Oh, man. I remember they were saying stories on, they brought in, was it Rick James Brown?
Yes.
To do a show.
Yes.
Did you ever run into that artist?
No, I did not. I was too young.
Yeah.
I mean, I listened to him because my stepdad, my mom, they listened to everybody.
Right.
And we did see a lot of the Motown artists because they were very good about filtering out into the neighborhood.
Okay.
And doing just small events and things.
Right.
So we had a chance. I remember Marvin Gaye set up shop outside the Cunningham Drug Store.
Yeah.
At, for those that are familiar with Detroit, at it's Rosa Parks Boulevard now, but 12th and Grand Boulevard. He did a performance. I was like a little boy, but I'll never forget that.
Wow. So, big.
Good times, man.
Wow.
Good times.
What made you guys wanted to leave Chicago?
I believe my stepfather at the time had a couple of aunts that lived in Miami.
Okay.
And he wanted to just lift up and make the move because both he and my mom were educators. They were teachers.
Oh, okay.
So back then, teachers were thoroughly respected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little different today.
Right.
They were thoroughly respected. So it was a great thing if you were in the teaching profession. So they decided to move down here. Mm-hmm. And that's what moved me to Florida.
Wow. Now, was you a mom's or a dad's boy?
Well,
they would say.
I was, and I still am, a mama's boy.
Okay, okay.
You know, when my mom sees a copy of this podcast, she'll be like, yeah, that's true. a lot of my philosophies and the things that I do, I got from my mom. Because my stepdad, although he really taught us a lot.
Right.
But he was also abusive. So I got to see that part of it. And then my real father.
Right.
Ended up going into a mental institution when I was 2. You know, mother came in and saw him just beating me and beating me and beating me.
Wow. Yeah.
And he never came out. And that's where he passed away at a mental institution. So I'm very familiar with the aspects of mental health and the systems.
Yeah.
But I'm a mama's boy.
Man. So your stepdad, you never really established a solid relationship with him.
I think our relationship came later on in life when he realized that, you know, my brother and I were really good guys.
Right, right, right.
You know, we stay out of trouble. We worked hard. We got families. But at the time, sometimes stepchildren get the business, if you know what I mean.
Right, 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 right.
And we kind of got a little bit of the business. But I could always count on being at the window in Detroit, looking outside. My mom would come home, and I knew everything was going to be all right.
Going to be good.
That's why I'm a mama's boy today.
Man, that is amazing.
I cherish my mother.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she's still alive at 81 years old.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah. Now, school life, was there any challenge for you guys? Like, so it's you and your brother.
There really wasn't. Like I said, the schools in Detroit were excellent, even though they were right in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
They were excellent, and that prepared me for anything that I needed to have when I came to Florida. When I came to Florida, it was my first taste of integration.
Right.
But, I mean, our our skills were sharpened going to those inner city schools. Okay. I had no problems integrating into middle school.
Right.
But, you know, as you can see, I'm a light-skinned brother. You're a dark-skinned brother. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I got the names of being, you know, white boy and this and that. But yeah. In time, I was accepted in our neighborhood in Florida. And middle school just flew by. It was great.
Yeah.
High school was unbelievable for me. I mean, yeah. I was in the band. I was in chorus. I played football 1 year. I decided to give football up to do more academic stuff.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, it was beautiful. I ended up being 26 in a class of 500.
Wow.
And, you know, this was an integrated school. So, yeah, things came easy and we worked hard. And I enjoyed life. There were good times back then.
Yeah, you got to tell us about when you were in the band, man. How did you even get in the band? How did you get picked to be in the band?
So I got in band because my stepfather, and these were some of the good things that he did.
Right.
He's like, look, he always called us doctor. Look, doctor.
Yeah.
Y'all going to get out of the house and go do something. So I bought y'all these trombones.
Okay.
And y'all are joining band.
Oh, wow.
So we were forced to, but we ended up liking it, and that's what actually pulled me away from sports
more
into academics.
Okay.
But we did band, we did drum corps. It was great experience.
Doing it.
Oh yeah, great experiences, man. So that's how I got into music. I was forced into it.
Yeah.
But I'm still in it today.
You're still in it today.
Number of different ways.
You know, I got to tell you guys, man. I don't go out as much, but I know whenever I do go out, most of the time, you're the master of sermon.
That has been an earned pedigree.
Yeah.
I have earned that. And jumping ahead a little bit, I've been here almost, almost 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been in Fort Myers. But immediately when I came, I was already a DJ on the East Coast.
Oh, in Miami?
In Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. Okay, okay.
You know, the scene over there was just, was booming back then.
Yeah.
You know, so, wow. But I came over here and just started doing the same thing. And I gradually, you know, got my name out there. And, and one of the things that stuck with me over the years of doing this is I show up on time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm professional no matter what the crowd.
Right, right.
I don't have an entourage.
There you go.
And I try to take care of the people that I'm there to serve and play music for.
I like that, man.
Simple things, simple tenets.
You just said something that I know the listeners will appreciate. You show up on time.
That is so important, no matter what you do. Even this morning, coming to the podcast, I got stuck in traffic. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
Sure enough, you did text me.
Yeah.
Trust me, I left home at 8:25.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
But got caught up. But I like to be on time. You know, I have, just like you do.
Yeah.
We have our fingers in so many things.
Yes.
So you have to have a calendar and you have to have a timetable. And
that's
what I have. And I try to stick to it.
Yeah. So from what we're hearing right now, you spend life up to 30 on the East Coast when you move from Detroit.
Yes.
Man. So now, because of the space that you're in and then with the gigs you're doing as a DJ, what else was pulling you to do other stuff to help impact lives?
Oh, you mean when I got over here?
Right.
Actually, when I got over here, I started working for Sony almost immediately.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But at the same time, she eventually became my wife.
Okay.
Her uncle owned a club. It was called a Spanish bar on MLK for anybody.
A Spanish bar?
It was called the Spanish bar, but it wasn't a Spanish bar. It was called the Spanish bar.
Yeah, okay.
So that's where I started DJing. But while I was working at Sony, I became involved with their Community Involvement Council, which is basically the company's way of getting out into the community.
Right.
So I started mentoring at Lee Middle. It's James Stevens now.
James, yeah.
Back then it was Lee Middle.
Yeah.
We started working with the Boys and Girls Clubs. I would DJ our company events at work.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm mentoring children.
Right.
We started with the Thomas Alva Edison Regional Science and Invention Fair, where we were judging. I'm still involved with that as a board member now.
Wow.
So I was on one side, I was in the community doing things.
Yeah.
On the other side, I was DJing. In the middle, I was working for Sony.
Wow. And so, you know, getting into Sony then started writing contents and stuff.
Well, actually, I started at Sony as an agent, as a customer service agent, and just kind of steadily worked my way up through the ranks.
Okay.
And I spent most of my career there as a trainer or the training manager. And what that entailed back then was our company had, most of our agents were in the building at first. So we had like 1,000 people working at our facility in Gateway.
Right.
But as we started outsourcing that, we had to go into other countries and train these agents. And that's what I did.
Wow.
So, and opening up call centers, let's see, we opened call centers in Brazil, El Salvador, Costa Rica, the Philippines, India, and Canada. And I went to all of those locations.
That's amazing.
And I would be, and this is where I'm grateful to work for a company like Sony, because I was often the first person that these people saw.
Right.
And they saw what? A black man.
A black man, yep.
You know, had enough skill sets to come out and bring up a call center from scratch.
That's
now,
amazing.
There was a lot of help. There was a team.
Right.
Team stateside where everybody had their position, but I was that linchpin.
Yeah.
Now, I'm grateful for Sony Electronics and the management for giving me that opportunity.
That is amazing.
That's what allowed me to see the world.
Yeah. Wow. So, because they've, with what you had going on at Sony, did that ever conflict with your DJing on the weekends and stuff?
I'm going to say I learned really fast not to let that conflict.
Okay.
I learned really quick to schedule around what's important first, which is your job.
Your main job.
Your main job that gives you sustenance and, more importantly, pays the insurance.
There you go.
That's what I had to work around. So that's where I became really good at just making sure I kept up my calendar. So in the 30 years I've been DJing, I think I've only missed one event.
Wow.
And all of the 30 years. But I learned way back then to make sure my time was correct.
Yeah.
And there was really no conflict, because a lot of the stuff, most of my work was 9 to 5.
Right.
The exceptions came up in maybe about 6 to 10 years into working at Sony, when I started traveling worldwide.
Right.
That's when, there were challenges then.
Yeah.
But we made it work.
Oh, man. So. Now, with the times that we're in now, you know, dealing with society, I mean, what are some of the changes you saw that you're like, man, I wish this never happened?
You mean like from then to now?
Yeah.
You want me to be truthful?
Be truthful.
Okay. To me, the biggest thing is there are a few things that I've seen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. Number one is I'm old enough and young enough to remember the descent into the I want to call it the encapsulation of the black man into the prison system.
Right.
It started with Reagan's war on drugs.
Right.
And it continued with something Clinton did in terms of his crime bill.
Right.
So basically, when I was a young boy, a lot of our black men started getting huge prison sentences for minor crimes.
Right.
You know, weed and things like that.
Yeah,
now you can smoke weed on the street.
Yeah.
And the cops are like, keep going.
Yeah.
Back then, you get 20 years for it.
20?
So, yes. You would get big time back then for that. And I think that's one of the biggest changes, because what that did is it eroded the black family.
Right.
Really, in my opinion, my humble opinion,
yeah,
it took away the black father. those from in the starting in the 70s into the 80s.
Yeah.
The prison population just ballooned. If you look at the stats, it just went up exponentially in that time frame.
Wow.
And most of those were men of color.
Right.
So that was one thing. The second one that I really see is, you know, everybody stays away from politics.
Right.
You know, that's like the elephant in the room. However, if we're going to move forward as a society, we have to address
it. You have to address the elephant.
We have to address it.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah.
What I do remember is that, you know, you had Reagan and then you had Clinton. I remember even Jimmy Carter being in office. But the thing that I remember most is that there was partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
And when you came into office, you would take care of your constituency.
Right.
But you would also govern for all of the people.
Right.
That is just gone out the door. If you come in, if you're Democrat, then you swing to the left. If you're Republican, you swing to the right. So now what we see, to me, is the rise in far left policies and the rise in far white policies.
Wow.
And far left, again, this is just my opinion.
Right.
You have some of the things like, and I'm not against gay rights or any of that.
Right.
But they're rewriting the laws on that side.
Right.
On the other side, I'm not against conservatism because I have conservative values. But what I don't like is the swing into supremacy.
Right.
And that's big. Everybody rejects it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. But yet still, you have HB 999 up in Congress in Florida now, where they're threatening to take out diversity and inclusion. They're threatening to take out, they don't want to do critical race theory in the colleges.
Right.
You go to college, Cornell, to explore.
But you have to explore stuff. Yeah.
So they don't want you to explore that. So those are the two biggest things, the eroding of the black family and the political landscape. I think it rules everything we do today.
Yeah.
Both of them.
I agree, man. And, you know, for the listeners that are listening, and I know they'll definitely agree with you on inclusion and how important that is now.
Yes. It's so important. Like for me, I don't care if you're LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're Asian,
right?
White,
right?
Black,
yeah.
Jamaican. A lot of times, Jamaicans say, "Oh, I'm not black. I'm Jamaican."
That makes sense.
I don't care.
Right.
It's what's in the heart.
That is. Yes.
And what the mindset is.
Right.
And I think we've lost sight of that. Like, you know, if you come into office and you're Republican, you know, you're going to stick with all values Republican no matter what.
Right.
So you tend to ignore what else is on the other side. So, yeah. It's interesting, but yes, we have lost the heart.
Yeah.
You know, and just like I applauded you a few days ago, what you did, we don't talk about it now, was from the heart.
Yes, sir.
You know, men don't do that.
Right.
And I truly applaud this man for doing
thank
that.
Thank you.
He called me in the morning, and that evening, it's like, it was done.
My man. Yes, sir. You know, you take action, and I believe that a lot of times when you want change, you got to start with you, you know,
and
see how that looks from there.
Absolutely.
I know now, I think a lot of the challenge is individuals that don't feel like their voice is important.
Oh, yes. And something that hopefully I get a little more time to step out with you on.
Yes.
Is how you are stepping into that space.
Right.
To help those young children, teens, those high school students that feel lost.
Right.
And they feel that people don't listen.
Right.
And to me, our youth right now,
mm-hmm.
on one side, people say they're lost.
Right.
I tend to disagree.
Yeah.
I tend to disagree with what you just said. People don't listen to
Right.
And, you know, when you listen, you can learn things. And I think that void that you're filling with that is commendable because you go, and I watch it. That's the beautiful thing about social media.
Right, you can
watch people. Yeah. They don't know you're watching.
Right.
So I watch this guy, and he doesn't know it.
Yeah.
But I see him in places where other people really don't want to go.
Right.
And doing things that people don't want to do. Yep. I commend you for that.
Definitely.
And that puts you in those spaces to help those people that are lost.
Yeah, and you know, I think I feel like because I died already, I have no fear of nothing now. And I just go wherever I see the need to go in and make those edits or those constructive guidance.
And I do remember, I remember you briefly telling me your story.
Yeah.
And how you, but just to go back on that, just real quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to tell you, because of a rider as myself in high school that never pursued riding, out of high school, I went into hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to gain that fast money. And with that, I think that put me in a headspace where I was liking that. And so, you know, opened up a security company from all the success I gained from that. Mm-hmm. And with that, competitors didn't like that. And the competitors then turn and say, you know what, this guy right here is getting all the business. We need to get rid of him. And so story was fabricated against me. And next thing I know, I'm in jail.
That's what it
was. Yeah. Doing 10 months, facing 32 years to life in prison.
Oh, man.
A whole lot.
But you got through that.
Got through that. And, you know, now I got to show people how it's possible, you know, and not to just continue dwelling on that, you know, because it's spoiled milk. It's done.
Yes. And I definitely feel that because I'm the type where I'm not afraid to go into any neighborhood.
Right.
I'm not afraid to go into any environment.
Right.
And that's in part because I've seen death and I haven't died, but I've lived through it. You know, like I was in Detroit and one of my school buddies, they wanted his Chuck Taylors.
Oh, man.
They shot him.
Wow. And they took them Chucks.
Man. I mean, he was right there next to me. Boom.
Wow.
And I remember that. I never forget it.
Man.
Didn't tell many people about it, just ran home and kind of locked it away, but that stuck with me.
Yeah.
And then another situation is my wife and I, we had a baby girl in 2003 and she had Down syndrome.
Right.
But to make a long story short, she came home for a few months, beautiful situation.
Yeah.
But she needed heart surgery. So when she went in for heart surgery, she basically didn't come out. So we lost her.
Man.
And that, to me, from that point on, I don't fear death.
Yeah.
If I can lose one of my children, one of my children can go before me, I shouldn't fear it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had a lot of people have come to me since they've read my book, Escaping a Life Sentence, that talk about when I died for 16 minutes and the experience.
I'm going to go buy that book.
I'm telling you, you look at a lot of things different because what unfolds in that time is a lot of things that you don't necessarily need to speak on. You just need to live.
Mm-hmm.
Live it out. Let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But in that process, you need to still pursue what that look like, you know, because you're walking in your purpose, you know, as you are, you know, doing now. And, you know, as you guys can see, I mean, look at him. You would not think he's going to be 60 in a little bit here.
That's be 61.
61. He's already 60. That's crazy.
I'm thinking about retirement, man.
what they say? 67 is retirement age?
I think it's 65 now. 65, I really haven't looked.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about it, but it's at that point, though.
Man, you look good, my brother. That's beautiful, man. So, you know, between the different countries that you have traveled, which one would you say stood out to you that?
Oh, man. I'm going to say there are a few of them.
Yeah, okay.
Really a few.
Yeah.
I, people, I remember my boss telling me that if you, when you go to India,
yeah,
you come back different, you know, because it's such a radically different culture,
right,
as
right,
opposed to ours. But I thoroughly enjoyed India. I have a couple of friends that I keep up with mm-hmm. socially, and one day I'm going to go back and visit.
Beautiful.
We're going to travel the country. So I loved India. I truly love the Philippines.
Okay. Okay.
Really, really good people attached to us
yeah.
through war and
right.
you know, with World War II.
Right.
Mainly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful country there. I loved. I absolutely love Japan and Korea.
yeah. Yeah.
Because number one, they're so clean.
Right.
Let me give you a story. We were at a supermarket.
Yeah.
My wife and my mom and sister mm-hmm. on Jeju Island, which is like the Hawaii of Korea.
Right.
And a little kid spilled all his bag of chips. Mm-hmm. His mom picked up every one of those chips wow. and put them in the garbage. Wow. That's the way yes. that they live. They conserve. They keep clean. Their transportation systems are beautiful. Just really, really great places to visit. I'll probably say that my favorite place
uh-huh.
is probably Africa.
Wow.
You know, I went to Ghana last year.
Okay.
And it was a transformative trip.
Yeah.
And I'm making plans now to go to Tanzania. I want to go to Kenya with one of my fraternity brothers.
You love Kenya. I've been there. It's...
Oh, yeah. But to me, Ghana was transformative because... As soon as we got off the plane, it was like welcome. You felt home.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, it's busy. Yes, you know. There, to me, I had no issues with crime. I walked around, did whatever I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, you know, there's always a little pickpockets and things like that.
Right, right, right.
But it was just transformative to go there and see a completely African culture. And that kind of, it no doubt changed me. And that's I'm going beautiful. Back to different countries.
That's good.
Yeah. Now, I had been to Morocco in my travels with Tony,
mm-hmm.
and that was beautiful as well.
Right.
That's a Northern Africa feel mm-hmm. versus
yep.
Western Africa with Ghana. So, yeah, but I have many favorites. I could, Costa Rica was just beautiful. Brazil, I wasn't a fan of.
No.
And a lot of people love Brazil.
Right.
Because, you know, they say Brazilian women are beautiful. That they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's something to seeing women of all hues mm-hmm. and colors and beautiful. So that is true.
Right.
And Brazil has the largest population of people of African descent,
African descent,
than America.
Right, right.
We don't really look at that and know that.
Right, right.
But their racism is much more embedded.
It is,
in here. You know, here in America, you know, they're changing laws, they're doing right. things. They're, you know, they'll, you know, maybe depending on how you feel, law enforcement slanted against us.
Right.
But if you want to do something and be somebody,
right,
you can here.
Yes, yes.
In Brazil, it's almost like a caste system.
Wow.
You know, that, just my opinion.
Yeah.
You want everybody to go to the beach and enjoy Carnival,
mm-hmm.
but you don't see many people of African descent as lawyers and doctors and in the government.
I see.
Look real closely.
Right, right, right.
And that's Brazil just is a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
Just not one of my favorite places. And neither is China either.
Right.
Beautiful place. So much history, so much beauty, but we know what's happening with China.
You know, I heard someone said the other day that culture is not important. What would you say to that?
Really?
Yeah.
I think culture, under the surface,
right,
rules everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got a conservative person, there's a conservative culture.
Right.
You got a democratic or a liberal person, there's a liberal culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have someone that's Germany, they hold some of the German cultural aspects
right.
tight.
Right.
The Latinos are yeah. a big example.
Yeah.
They exhibit their culture continually all the time.
Right.
Everywhere they go.
Mm-hmm.
Even where I live now, there's a lot of all of my neighbors are Latino now. And that wasn't the way when I moved in 24 years ago.
Right. Wow.
But they hold on to their culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, to me, I totally disagree with that.
Yeah.
That's somebody that's just, that's tone deaf thinking to me. No. Culture rules everything when you think about it.
It really does. And you feel that, you know, and not to even make it a black thing, but you feel our culture, our blacks, just either want to dive into other culture, which is what hinder us from being as united as the other races.
Ooh, touchy. And I'm going to say, and this is based on my, in large part on my travels.
Right.
And I'm going to say, for us in America, yes, it does. It hinders us because we don't, either we don't know how to hold on to our culture.
Right.
Or that passage of the cultural rights has stopped at some point.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was younger, my granddad, grandma, uncles, they used to tell me about historical things.
Right.
And tell me about, you know, how my great-great-great-grandfather was a slave and what they did and stuff. Right. That's kind of gone now.
Right.
So we tend to exhibit or look for other cultural traits instead of trying to move ours forward. And I think that is a, I think that's a blocking point to us as people here in America.
Yeah.
I do, truly do. I mean, you from Jamaica.
Yeah.
So what part of Jamaica are you from?
The Kingston area.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you hold on to your traditions.
Right.
You don't get rid of your accent.
Right. Yes.
You know, you don't get rid of the traditional things that you as a Jamaican man would do.
Right.
But being here in the States, a lot of us, particularly younger people of younger African Americans or black folks, don't learn and don't assimilate or get that assimilation of culture from their past like we used to.
Right.
That's missing. But that doesn't happen with you because Jamaicans hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Haitians hold on.
Yep.
You know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good
thing. We hold on. So it's the and this could lead into the rumor. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna put it as rumor.
Okay.
That we don't read.
Based on what I've seen throughout my life, as a student, as a young boy that would sit at home and read maps and get joked on when I went outside and and also teaching.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a rumor.
Okay.
I think we don't read as much as we really should.
Okay.
And I think that does, as a culture, that can have an effect.
Right.
You know, like a guy like you.
Yeah.
I truly wonder if you looked at your demographics. I mean, if you could go to Amazon and look at your demographics for Cornell Bunting's books.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder how many blacks you see.
The percentage is very low.
There it is. So it's not rumor.
The percentage is 2.7.
It's fact. See? You've already done it. So it's fact. So when I'm out there now and let's say I'm doing an event.
Right.
And I run into a kid that gets it to me that they're reading.
Right.
I put an accent on that child.
Beautiful.
Because there's far too many of our children that don't read.
Right.
They stick to their phones, they'll TikTok, Snapchat. Of course, I have a TikTok account, I have a Snapchat. I don't use either one of them.
Right.
You know, I do use Instagram.
Yeah.
I use Facebook because it allows me to communicate with all of my friends around the world.
Right.
But I think the social media pieces is even taking our children farther away from reading.
Right.
And we were already behind eight ball. So to me, I don't think that's a rumor. I think that's fact.
That is fact. Oh my goodness. Unfortunately.
I think it's fact.
Now, as a DJ, what is your go-to music?
My go-to music is, believe it or not, when I started, I did rock.
Oh, yeah?
I was a 60s, 70s classic rock, big hair bands, wow, wow. Poison, Journey, Frampton, Led Zeppelin, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I remember going to Elton John concert. I was 14.
Yeah.
I'll never forget his Captain Fantastic concert. Elton yeah. John was the man.
Yeah.
And that was way back then.
Right.
But I've gravitated to the point that I am a firm believer in classic and even contemporary rhythm and blues.
Contemporary.
Classic. Ooh. All the way to contemporary rhythm and blues and soul. Oh, wow. I yeah. think that's a musical genre mm-hmm. that cuts across.
Right, right.
Cuts across all cultural lines.
Right, right.
I think everybody loves some R&B at some point.
Yeah.
And that's what I love to do.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I wouldn't still be getting called out there to do kiddie parties and things if I couldn't do the latest hip hop
right,
and rap and stuff. But my preference is classic soul and even up to contemporary R&B. It's just good music.
You think a lot of this, because, you know, you've played the rap and a lot of people mm-hmm. say they don't understand a lot of what they say. You think a lot of that is misleading?
No, I think that's true because there's been a shift in rap music.
Right.
When, again, me being old enough,
right.
I was there at the beginning in the formation of rap.
When it started.
So I remember the Sugar Hill Gang,
yeah.
Boogie Down Productions,
right.
and things like that. And back then, it was just a form of battling socially
right.
and with good nature,
right.
you know, good intentions.
Yeah.
And even then, as the New York scene developed,
right.
remember all of those groups, Tribe Called Quest,
right. yep. Yep.
Leaders
yep.
of the New School.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I could go on and on. The rap was, it had a tendency to be more conscious.
Right.
Now it's just itches and goes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, they're talented.
Right.
There's no doubt there's so much talent out there.
Right.
But it's all about the wrong thing. So consequently right. now, if you go to an old school rap concert,
right.
all the artists are there.
Right.
But if you were to do a new school,
right.
a small percentage of them are gone. They've been
right.
killed,
yeah.
taken out.
Yeah.
I could, you know, P&B Rock, Pop Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the yeah. nature of the game
right,
is that
right.
it's braggadocious.
It's, yeah.
it's women and money and misogyny. So what happens is somebody finds out that you're in L.A. staying at an Airbnb and got
yeah.
a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Pop Smoke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, it's degenerated. I love rap.
Right.
But it has degenerated, and the expectation is to talk about money and, you know, the next fight,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that. And it's unfortunate because rap has a healthy history
mm-hmm.
and has a huge following, both
right.
black and white and Latino.
Right, right, right.
You know, so, yeah, that's why I love my soul. You know, I truly do love the Latin music
right.
as well.
That's beautiful.
You know, whether it's, my favorite is bachata.
Bachata, okay.
I love bachata.
Yeah.
Wow. The batano is cool.
Yeah.
Reggaeton's good.
Yeah.
I love my, you know, my salsa and merengue.
Right, right, right.
So I listen to everything and I can play a little bit of everything.
That's beautiful.
But I still go back to soul, R&B.
Gotta do it.
Yes, but I really wish there are less conscious rappers
mm-hmm.
now.
No, yeah.
Most of them were conscious rappers back in the day. Now
right.
it's more of the street rap.
Right.
And there are ramifications and consequences
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah.
My son had we were talking and he was asking me why, because I guess they just put a rapper in jail for stuff that he rapped about or something like that.
So I think you're talking about Young Thug,
yep.
Gunner.
Yep, yep, yep.
So as I understand it, there was some shootings and gunplay involved. I can't remember off the top if someone died.
Right.
But then that manifested in rap music, basically implicating themselves.
Right.
If I remember the story, they went and arrested them under the RICO Act.
Uh-huh.
So these guys who were just 2 years ago probably making 20, 30K a show.
Yeah.
Now they're looking at 20, 30 years in prison.
Yeah.
Wow. All because of the manifestation of how they approach their music.
Right.
And their music then becomes a manifestation of life.
Right.
If you talk that talk, you got to walk.
You got to walk.
And yeah, so yes, I think those trials are still ongoing, as a matter of fact. And, you know, and when you look at it, you have a, you know, you have a young black man making all kinds of money, wearing platinum and things like that.
Right.
So if you if you're rapping about that, you become a target.
Right. Right.
And I mean, I could go deep into that. I remember, I think it was last year.
Yeah.
Rapper MO3.
Right.
In Houston.
Yeah.
Was gunned down in the middle of the freeway.
He was on the freeway. Yeah. Wow.
You know, again, what you talk and preach about sometimes manifests in action.
Why do you think a lot of these guys now, and it's like a behavior that they're not used to the money that they're getting, or they're so excited about the money they're getting, they have to just put it out there or spend it where the spending doesn't make sense?
I really don't know, because I'm not in that. Not in that. But if I would put out an opinion, I think they grow up in the culture.
Right.
You know, like, oh, conscious rap doesn't get you anywhere. Rapping about the streets does.
Right.
So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rap about the streets.
Right.
And then it becomes you rapping about the streets, and in your lyrics you say the wrong thing, and then it just snowballs from there. I mean, look at the Migos.
Right. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was Quavo's nephew that was killed in Texas.
Right.
I mean, that was so senseless.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think the movement is to talk more and rap more about the streets and the lyrics.
And with
that comes the ramifications of doing that. Unfortunate.
Yeah. Right.
And I agree. I like it all. Some of my favorite all-time songs come out of the streets.
They come hard.
You know? But I look at artists like, let's give an example, like Outkast.
Yeah.
To me, one of the greatest rap groups out there, hands down.
Yeah.
They could rap about the streets.
Right.
And rap about women.
Yeah.
Then get singers in there and rap about love.
Right.
Yeah. But they never made it so gritty.
Right.
That they became an object in the streets.
That's amazing.
So that's just my opinion.
Right.
Just from what I've seen.
Now, with the busy life that you have right now, what does that balance look like with family?
It's crazy. I got to give a shout out to my wife, Tammy, because she puts up with me doing the things that I do.
Wow.
And, you know, I have to. I'll give you a snapshot, and I'm sure you understand this, because you do the same thing.
Definitely.
So Monday I was on a conference call with a science fair participant. Science fair that I'm a board member of, steering committee member of.
Right.
Tuesday I was on with a gentleman from the Voices for Racial Justice, which is headed by Mr. Jim Nathan, CEO of Lee Health. Not headed, but he's one of the primary members.
Right.
Him and Mrs. Audra Anderson and a couple other people.
Right.
Wednesday, what did I do Wednesday? Wednesday, I did nothing but spent time with my granddaughter. Yesterday, we had a board meeting for the Community Foundation
in
Cape Coral. I'm a board member for the Community Foundation under Michael Chapman.
Great
guy.
Yes.
Great, transformative guy. And then today I'm here with you.
Right.
And last night I was supposed to go downtown and go to Brian Franklin. Shout out to Gulf Coast Leisure, a beautiful thing that showcases the artist.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go there.
Right.
And also Monday I was supposed to go to Poets Realm.
Right.
With Brother Ernell Grant.
Ernell,
so I'm always doing something.
Right.
And then Saturday I go back to DJing a party.
Right.
Sunday, I'm going to support another event. And that's, it's just on and on and on. The thing about it is that I'm trying to, now that I'm getting older,
right,
I'm trying to shut down and not do quite as much.
Yeah.
And then I'll get up and I'll be in Alabama, because we, that's where we're going to retire to.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I'll be up there,
yeah,
you know, tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I'll be on the East Coast, because my other two granddaughters over there.
Over there.
It's just one thing after another.
Moving.
Yes. And, but I credit, you know, my wife allows me to do it.
Okay.
Number one. Mm-hmm. And she supports it. And then I try to keep my time so that I can get everything in.
That's beautiful.
You know, you hear that thing, jack of all trades, master of none. That's probably, probably me.
I don't know if I would say master of none, but
probably me.
This, yeah. You know, with a lot of what you're doing, man, and I know a lot of brothers that see what you're doing and are grateful for you, man, and how you're impacting our community and what you do and stuff, you know. With your wife, you know, being a strong backbone of what yes. you're doing and helping you,
mm-hmm.
you know, moving forward, you know, for even a lot of these guys that are listening and ladies as well, what would you say to them, you know, when those opportunities arise and they feel like they're overwhelmed?
Time management is important to learn at an early age.
Right.
I didn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even today, my wife tells me that I'm wishy-washy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But I didn't learn time management. I didn't learn money management, because right. nobody taught that to us.
Right. Right.
So those are the first two things that I would stress, to learn how to manage your time.
Right.
And then learn how to manage your money.
Right.
The very first two things. And then after that, but closely behind it,
right.
is to get a full education. They don't yeah. call it 3 R's for nothing.
Right, right, right.
You have to learn how to read, because reading truly is fundamental.
Yep.
You have to do your arithmetic,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you have to follow through with that. And I think you would agree with this. One of the things that going to that strong inner city school.
Right.
When I got to Florida, I was like, man, there's only like 4 black kids in every class of 20.
Wow.
And I'm just as smart as a white kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just being blunt.
Right, right.
And I could keep up with them. So transfer that to now, years and years later.
Right.
I'm equally at home.
Yeah.
Talking to the president.
Right.
Or talking to some 4-year-old that has autism.
Right,
that's the
right.
way I feel. So
yeah.
when you get a full education, there are no boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go out and learn how to code, you can do it. You know how to find it,
right.
how to learn it.
Right, right, right.
But yeah. you might not know it,
right.
but you can go out and learn
it. I learn it.
But you have to have that backbone.
Yeah. Need that backbone. And once you have that, you're good.
It's so man, important. And you can do anything.
Yeah.
And you know, testimonials.
Definitely, you know, and I think you got to throw persistency in there.
That's right.
You know, and what that looks like, you know. So, you know, with where we're heading right now, and you have individuals that are a little confused on inclusion and society.
When you say inclusion in society, before I talk on it, explain what you mean.
So, with everything that we're doing right now, things we knew from before and the changes that are being made
mm-hmm.
that we were used to,
okay,
that now we have to make adjustment.
Got it.
To what that look like now, with a lot of people that possibly fear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or fear the wording.
Got it.
What that looked like. What would you say to those listeners?
Okay, I'll start with the whole, let's just take the critical race theory thing.
Right.
Just use that as my little platform.
Right.
I am a product and a child of affirmative action.
Beautiful.
If affirmative action was not around when I came of high school age,
right.
I would have never gotten the opportunities that I got.
Right.
You know, I got to go to school for engineering.
Right.
I got grants and scholarships that I never would have gotten
right.
if affirmative action was not there.
Right.
But I used that to get an excellent education and to prepare myself for any endeavor that I wanted to pursue.
Right.
I had the mindset, the persistence,
mm-hmm.
and the feeling that I can succeed if I put my heart into it.
Right.
So, in turn, looking at today, now they're trying to take that away.
Right.
You know, they're taking out critical race theory before it even starts.
Right.
They've already taken out affirmative action for the most part.
Right.
So now you either have to know somebody.
Right.
Or you have to have those three R's intact.
Intact.
So that the things, when you go take your SAT, you get that great score so they can look at it as a more colorblind approach.
Right.
I'm not saying that affirmative action and critical race theory can be thrown out the door, because I feel that they can't.
Right.
Because the reasons why they were brought into existence still exist.
Right.
However, going back to something I said earlier, if you have those three R's intact and you have the ability to learn and to assimilate into different areas real fast,
mm-hmm.
your color doesn't matter as
right.
much. You right. still have to know certain people. You have to have persistence. Which you said.
Right, right.
You have to have that persistence to get out there and network and get to know people, because
right.
somebody on the other side
yeah.
is going to say, hey, that kid is sharp. He's
yeah.
smart.
Yeah.
I want to give him an opportunity with my company.
Right,
and
right.
the way it goes. So I guess the biggest thing is to make sure that you get prepared with everything that's available now for
wow.
free. And I'm going to come back to that a little later.
Yeah.
Make sure you get prepared. Make sure you reach out and use your resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then just have that persistence. And yes, there are inclusionary pieces that will put you out sometimes.
Right, right.
For example, it's hard for us as people of color
right.
to break into. You go around and you see all of these sites being broken down
right,
to build construction. Well, guess
right.
what? There's nobody black doing that.
Right, right, right.
You know,
yeah.
those are the kinds of pieces that you need help to
yeah,
get.
Yeah.
That same help that they're trying to take away.
Right.
However, if you come in and you have, you know, you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's, maybe that owner is going to see it.
Yes, yes.
And bring you in.
Right.
So
right.
to me, inclusion, it is changing.
Yeah.
But there's still ways around it with aptitude, persistence,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
and academic acumen.
Wow.
I think. That's my opinion. Small opinion.
Now, if, if anyone wants to find you, to book you, what does that look like? How can individuals find you?
And the reason why I put a caveat on that is that, you know, in today's world,
right.
DJs are always blasting what they do.
Right, and, right, yeah.
And everybody's advertising is great. I don't have to do that.
There you go, yeah.
Because everybody calls me because they know what they're
right.
getting, or somebody's referred me, so I strictly go on word of mouth.
I don't advertise at all. I like that.
And but if you know, on Instagram it's DJ Red Dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. And Facebook it's just straight Todd Thomas, and you see my gleaming face right there. And I, you know, I also have a Facebook business site, but
yeah.
I just don't use it because
right.
I'm really trying to slide away
right.
from DJing. I want to spend time with my family, and I'm a family guy.
Beautiful.
And actually, the family dictated my direction in life.
I like
you know,
that.
I should have been making more money than I make. I should have been running,
right.
but I chose not to.
Right.
To raise my brother and sister and help my mom out when she was going through a divorce.
That's awesome. Bro.
So, you know, I just choose to be a regular guy.
Yeah.
But regular guys have good lives.
Regular guys do have good lives. So, you know, I'm really appreciative of you creating this story with me today on the show.
Hey, I'm appreciate you having me because, I'm one of those guys that's under the radar, so nobody brings me in and sits me down like this.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate it. I have a lot to say.
Yes, sir. A wealth of knowledge over here, guys. And, man, I really appreciate you, man, and everything that you're doing, continue doing. Yes. Listen, man, I'm inspired, you know, and I'm grateful to know you as a brother. And,
yes, sir.
You know, we're in the circle, and it's beautiful.
Likewise. And, I mean, we pass each other in the night.
Yes, yes.
Because we're doing so many different things.
Right. But
I've always respected your assent.
Thank you.
To what you're doing.
Yes,
and
sir.
I could see myself coming to one of those schools of at-risk kids.
Yes.
Coming with my DJ set and then breaking down life straight from the music.
That's it. That's it, man. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Oh, we're going to do that.
Oh, definitely.
Kids love music.
Oh, yeah.
I can play their music, albeit clean version.
There you go. Yeah.
And then I'll say, look, somebody's sitting in Aruba making $10 million because they designed this jog wheel.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody's sitting in Europe making money on their butts because they designed the layout of this controller. Break it down like that.
Yeah.
And then you also mention that probably most of these multimillionaires never went to college.
Right. They just created and invented something and that was it. It was done.
But I definitely respect you, my brother.
Hey, man. Listen, this was beautiful. There you guys have it. We just created another story right here with the amazing Todd Thomas. You know, guys, if you don't know him, you need to get to know him.
Just a regular guy doing stuff.
That's it. It's a beautiful thing. So until next episode, thank you for tuning in to Stories to Create podcast right here at Yas Club.
Well, there you have it. The host came, the guest came, and the story was created. Thank you to our sponsors, EHAS Inc., Karis Capital, and the Cornell Bunting LLC brand. Go check out the books, courses, and materials at www.cornellbunting.com. Thank you again for listening to the show. Check back again to hear another tale from another unique guest right here at EHAS Club.